running away because we've got the apology. Also to the DG. The DG has got some challenges at home, and I think we can accept the apology of the DG because also as a parliament, we are also very worried about our families. So if anything happens to our families, they should be attended to. But there is capable people, the TDGs, as well as the department that are here to represent the TDGs. So let me put it on record for the opposition that we have accepted these two apologies. Mashamban?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great stuff. I don't need to ask the Alliance, the other party, because, I mean, you are speaking on behalf of the Alliance, Mashamba. Okay, thank you very much. So please convey our the acceptance of the apology over to the DG and to the minister that there was unanimous acceptance of the apologies. Colleagues, comrades, friends, we will start with our budget briefing, but I see there's a lot of new faces because this is not a brand new department, but it is a department that has been split into two, TME and it's now DOE. You are now DOE, but you are still with corporate services, the both departments. DDG. So you're standing like this now with both departments. All right. But let me start from the outset. My name is Freddie Adams. I'm permanent delegate from the Western Cape, representing the African National Congress. I'm also the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic Development. And for those that don't know, in the NCOP we are clustered. In other words, one committee represents or have oversight over three departments. Now, this committee has got oversight of economic development, mineral resources, and energy. That's our core departments that we've got functions over. And then we are also sharing membership with the Committee on Trade and International Relations, which my comrade and colleague next to me, Honorable Kamere, is the chairperson on, and that is trade and industry, international relations, and cooperative government and tourism. So that is the cluster that we are made up of. So I'll go along the line and everyone introduce themselves and we start again there with Mike Steed also and we finish off with the DDG here. Honorable Member.
Bafuna Nimguni from the Free State.
Masifa Kodekhal from Limpopo Province.
Shiri Chen from Gauteng.
Alf Lee KZN.
Kenneth from Play Northern Cape.
Mike Stead Engine Petroleum.
Bill Clinton PMG.
Libumukiti Energy.
Nonsense and Debele, Department of Energy.
Atonich Bazaul from Energy.
Chief Subramani from Energy.
George Mguni from the Department of Energy.
Muzin Kiza from the Department of Energy.
Sidiso Makwela, Department of Energy.
Tanega Zungu, Department of Energy.
Martin Masamola, Department of Energy.
And Ompi Apani, Department of Energy.
I did not have a brother in energy.
Where is that? I thought you only had brothers in mining. But, well, you should welcome your brother, Comrade Mguni, with a nice... strong drink afterwards. Well, honorable members, as you know, that I think the budget vote is on the 22nd of the budget vote is on the 22nd of let's just quickly see. Of April. TDG, the budget vote is on the 22nd of April. It's been confirmed by the Leader of Government Business and by the NCOP. TDG, over to you and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, good afternoon. As you see on the board, the presentation would have been done by our DG. Unfortunately, couldn't make it, and thank you for accepting our apology and that of the minister. If you go to the second slide, you'll see that the team has already been introduced, the DOE team. Our presentation is going to follow the following format. I'll briefly take you what informed our strategic plan, and then we look at individual programs. In other words, we'll only focus on the key focus area for each of the programs within the department. Start with administration chief program one. And then we look at the update on the split of the DME, progress to date. We'll look at program two, hydrocarbons and energy planning. Program three, which is electricity, nuclear, and clean energy. And then we have an overall look at the total budget that has been allocated to the Department of Energy for the 2010-11. And then within that environment, just focusing on also the areas of critical importance within that budget. And then this will conclude our presentation. The presentations of individual programs will be done by the individual heads of those branches. And the program one, of course, will be done by me together with the introduction, which would have been done by the DG herself. What informed our strategic plan for this year, honorable members, we looked at the six key areas. We look at the government priorities as announced by the ruling party. We look at the State of the Nation address as presented by our president. We look at the national budget speech of our finance minister. We look at the budget vote speech, which was our minister's 2009 budget vote speech. We looked at the 2010 Cabinet Lekgotla's resolution. And lastly, and definitely not least, we look at the sector-specific challenges. Government priorities are the members and the creation of decent work and sustainable livelihood. We look at our role as the Department of Energy in the area of education, what role we can play in the area of health, as well as what role we can play in the area of rural development, food security, and land reform. And last but certainly not least, of course, the fight against crime and corruption. The State of the Nation address presented by our president earlier this year, it emphasized the four areas which were specifically for the Department of Energy or within the energy environment. We are part of the overall of the $846 billion that has been allocated to the public investment over the 3 years. We are also part of the establishment of the Interministerial Committee on Energy to develop a 20-year integrated resource plan, which my colleagues will give more details later. The Interministerial Committee on Energy is chaired by the Minister of Department of Public Enterprise, and the officials are headed by our own DDG, Ms. Makubani. So we are heavily involved in the process as a department. The State of the Nation address also look at the participation of independent power producers and protecting the poor from rising electricity prices. And lastly, look at the establishment of the independent system operator separate from ESCOM. As I've mentioned, honorable members, the experts in these areas will expand on the matter in terms of the department's progress or what our plans are. We also look at the national budget vote speech and the allocation of the funding or the focus of our finance minister on the three areas that affected the Department of Energy: the climate change and global energy supply, protection of the poor from rising cost of electricity, as well as the public sector investment. Honourable members, last year, the minister, around June last year, made her first budget vote speech. She made a couple of commitments on behalf of the department, and we have highlighted those commitments because during the presentations that individual members are going to be making, or the individual officials are going to be making, we will be responding briefly on the progress to date. The minister presented this budget vote speech about 10 months ago. So some of the areas we've not completed, some of them we have, some of them are work in progress because they take over a year to finalize. So the individual areas will give you details. But just briefly on the focus areas that the minister emphasized on the budget vote speech last year. It was firstly the review of the National Strategic Fuel Stocks Policy, the development of an integrated energy plan, the review of the fuel standards and specifications, the establishment of the South African National Energy Development Institute, the review of the Liquid Fuels Charter, establishment of the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, the conversion of the Safari reactor from using high-enriched uranium to low-enriched uranium by NEPSA, the promotion of the energy mix in the independent power producers, and the rollout of 1 million solar water heaters in households and commercial buildings over a period of 5 years. She further also made commitments in the areas of formalizing the engagement of the Clinton Foundation to facilitate the development of an industrial energy park concept focusing on the concentrated solar water, the establishment of the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, commissioning of 400 megawatts of wind power through the independent power producers over the next 3 years, and also the gazetting and the publishing of the integrated resource plan of country. As I continue, members, on the last commitments of the minister on slide number 10, she also committed to the displacement of 2% of crude oil-based fuels within biofuels, development of an appropriate pricing policy framework to structure our tariff regime such that the indigenous sections of our communities are insulated from increasing electricity tariffs, the launching of the rural electrification projects of Engowo, Inqubaya Themba, and Umhlonhlo that will ensure 170 million rand investment in the infrastructure development of the Chrisani and the Alfred Nzo district municipalities. Those, honourable members, were the commitments that the minister highlighted. And when you went through our strategic planning session, we had to go through that and see how far we've gone, what still needs to come into our new plans of the next 3 years going forward. We also look at the January Cabinet Lekota resolutions that cover the area of integrated infrastructure plan, implementation of the industrial policy, the 2010 FIFA World Cup, progress to date, our involvement as a Department of Energy, and also the inter-cluster activities. The last area that we looked at, honourable members, as the basis of our strategic plan was the area of the objectives of the energy sector. This area includes the increasing access to affordable energy services, improving of energy governance, stimulating economic development, managing energy-related environmental and health impacts, and securing supply through diversity. Those are basically what we looked at when we're doing our plan for the next MTF period. The next slide number 13, is just a summary of some of the pressures faced by the sector, which of course we have to take into account as part of the energy sector in the department. I won't go through the details of that. So, honourable members, Chairperson, this is basically what we have used in terms of looking at what our focus will be for the next 3 years. We also, of course, looked at our strategic plan for the year before, which was actually part of the DME strategic plan. We looked at our performance in that area and see if there's anything else that you still need to complete moving into the new environment of Department of Energy. Chairperson, Department of Energy strategic plan for 2010-11. How we have structured this presentation here is that we have separated it because this is now talking about what our plan did on the background that we've just given. Introduction, of course, I've given the introduction in terms of the basis of our strategic plan. I'll quickly take the committee on the strategic overview and the objectives that we identified, the organizational environment as we started the department, the policy development issue or policies that we're planning on tabling this year. The key focus areas, which is key focus areas for individual programs within the department, and of course the resource plan, and then the conclusion of our strategic plan. When we met last year, honorable members, as the new Department of Energy, we looked at the mandate of the minister that was given at this stage, in other words, the mandate separate from the mandate of the Department of Minerals and Energy. And the revised mandate and mission and vision of the DOE now stands as, firstly, the mandate is the ensuring secure and sustainable provision of energy for socio-economic development, and our revised mission is to regulate and transform the sector for the provision of secure, sustainable, and affordable energy. In line with the government's planning for both medium and long term, we develop visions for both horizons for the Department of Energy. Vision 2014, which takes care of the next 5 years, is a transformed and sustainable energy sector with universal access to modern energy carriers for all by 2014, that's the typo. And Vision 2025, which is the long-term vision that we have as the Department of Energy, is improving our energy mix by having 30% of the clean energy by 2025. As members will notice, this is a very beautiful vision, a beautiful, very beautiful dream for the department. Our strategic plan seeks to deliver results along the following 8 strategic objectives that have been identified for our department: ensuring energy security, achieve universal access and transform the energy sector, regulate the energy sector, effective and efficient service delivery, optimal utilization of energy resources, ensure sustainable development, enhance DOE culture, systems and people, and promote corporate governance within our organization. Those are the 4 8 strategy objectives that were identified for the Department of Energy. The next slide, honored members, talks to the organizational environment. In other words, what we already have within the Department of Energy as we start this financial year. Last year, we went through the process, which will be handed over, will be discussed later with the committee more in detail. We went through the process of splitting the 2 departments of minerals and energy. Of the 30-70 split in terms of the budget of the Department of Minerals and Energy, as well as, of course, the issue of the support services, the Department of Energy got the 30% of the budget of or the baseline of the Department of Minerals and Energy, although the functions have been duplicated. In other words, out of the total budget that was given, excluding, of course, the line function, because line function was already been separated, because we already had a branch that was dealing with, the 2 branches were dealing with energy. So the support services, which is program administration program 1, the split of that budget, it was based on the 30-70 split. Obviously, that meant less money for the Department of Energy, although, however, the functions would have been duplicated. The impact of a lesser budget, that's one of the things that you are grappling with in the department. As a result, we have established an interim structure to try and address the critical areas that need to be addressed as we establish a new department. If it was according to us, we would have all the money we have and all the people that we need, but unfortunately, at the moment, we don't. We have also looked at the issue of cooperation of SOEs. In other words, we've talked to the state-owned entities that report to the Minister of Minerals and Energy to ask if they can give us any assistance in terms of resources. That is now not financial resources, because everybody doesn't have money these days. So we ask for resources of human resources where they can loan us some of their people to help us establish that. The first phase of capacitating the DOE has been completed. That first phase was the area where we're matching and placing the DME personnel. And the way we've done it, just briefly on that one, is that we've asked people to say which department they would like to work for. But unfortunately, it wouldn't end there, because even if people wanted to go to energy, you must remember energy only has 30% of the funds. So that is one of the painful things we've had to go through in the past couple of months. But the process is finalized, people have been allocated, and everybody knows who they work for. And yes, Chair, I do work for Department of Energy. Yes. The second phase now, incapacitating the Department of Energy, is the issue, is the area of advertising and the filling of vacant posts. And that already has started. And we plan to have at least gone through the advertising process and some of the position filled by the end of the first quarter. Of course, it's going to depend on how fluid the personnel is. We'll be talking about support services. If you're an admin clerk in the Department of Energy, you can be an admin clerk in the Department of Sport. It doesn't matter. So we do have a challenge in saying that. Much as people have been placed, but you cannot be sure that they're going to stay there for as long as we need them to be there. So the second phase of our frame of advertising, once you advertise the post, then you'll be able to see within the first quarter who have we got really staying in the Department of Energy. Additional capacity, we are expecting to get that with the midterm adjustment. We've been promised some money by Treasury to actually try and adjust our funds. That will be sometime in September, October this year. So we'll hopefully be able to increase some of our capacity requirements. As mentioned already, the line function has maintained the two branches that it has, and because they also don't have enough funding in terms of expanding the anticipated structure, which one of my colleagues will go through with you later on. The revised structure takes into account the needs of the new Department of Energy. So that department actually needs four different branches within that department. But because of the funding, we're not able to implement that immediately as well. We have plans to gradually increase the line function capacity to realize the full structure of the new DOE by the end of the MTEF. This is a very generous period we've given ourselves. We're hoping that within the next 2 years, at least, we should have at least 80 to 90% capacity for the Department of Energy, both in the areas of support services and the area of our line function. Moving on to the next slide, Honourable Members, policy development. This is the legislative focus area for this year, which we are hoping to be presenting and discussing, of course, with the members at a later stage. The first one is the 17th Constitutional Amendment Bill. The RED Establishment Bill, which establishes efficient regional electricity distributors. The Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill, which is appropriation of land for electricity infrastructure, provision for the establishment of the ISMOs. The New Generation or IPP Regulation, which is the provision of regulatory intervention to level the playing field in the electricity generation sector. The Petroleum Products Amendment Act of 2003, which addresses non-compliance in the liquid fuel sector. The National Energy Act, which empowers the Minister of Energy to execute certain initiatives to achieve security of supply, develop regulations for the provision of energy data, as well as the review of the fuel specification regulation to advance to cleaner fuels. Honourable Members, we're all aware that this is going to be a short year for Parliament, and we do appreciate that our list is a bit exhaustive, but we will do our best to cover as much as we can in that area. But this is what we would have loved to present, given the opportunity. That, Honourable Members, concludes the summary of the introduction of the strategic plan for the Department of Energy. I will quickly take you now to Program 1 and Program 4, which is Program 4 is our state-owned entities, the key focus areas for this year. The main focus for Program 1 is support services, the DG's office and the ministry, and of course the internal audit function. The main focus for us as support services is the establishment of the new department. That is our focus for the year. We've been given the opportunity to present operational structures. We should talk to the mandate, we talk to the implementation of the mandate and the strategy of the department. We have to provide capacity and skills that are needed for the new department. So our main focus is the establishment of the new Department of Energy. Setting up of governance structures, some were legislated, some are good practice, like the internal audit function, which is the legislated function, the audit committee, the risk management and fraud prevention committees, the procurement and finance committees, all the legislated and required structures, governance structures to improve the operation of our department. We will also be focusing on the review of the international agreements that we had and some that we still hope to have going forward, aligning them to the government objectives and, of course, the objectives of the new department. We will also look at the at our communication strategy, which is important, that people need to know that there is a Department of Energy. The AOE doesn't stand for Department of Education anymore. It stands for the Department of Energy. So we have a huge task of profiling the department as the custodian of the country's energy security. The other area we'll be focusing on also this year going forward is the strengthening of our SOE oversight function, improving our processes, alignment, and capacity. We do have areas where some of our SOEs have got, we're dealing with the Department of Minerals and Energy. So we have to look at the energy element of those arrangements and see how best we can implement those. And of course, lastly, in the area of finance, complying with the financial legislation from day one, especially because the budget that we have been given for this year is a very challenging budget. Sorry, that was a duplication of the printing. Those, honorable members, would be the focus areas for the support services of the department for the year of 2010-11. Before I conclude, I just want to briefly take members through the state-owned entities reporting to the Minister of Energy. We have three groups of SOEs reporting to our minister. Firstly, we've got a group of researchers, research and development, and then we've got the regulators, and then of course we've got the EDI, which is the last one. Within the research and development area, we've got SELF, group of companies, and NEXA. And then within the regulators environment, we have the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, which is NERSA, and of course the National Nuclear Regulator, which is the NNR. And lastly, of course, is the EDI Holdings, which is the entity responsible for the restructuring of the existing electricity distribution entities into six financially viable regional electricity distributors, commonly known as the REDs. The Department of Energy, honorable members, have a responsibility of the oversight over all the state entities that have been established. These entities are the extended arm of government as well as the extended arm of the department, so they need to advance government priority. So our responsibility is to make sure that these SOEs are established as instruments of socio-economic advancement and also should have the means to contribute to the improvement of the standard of living of the citizens of our country, creating sustainable economic and social benefits. Our oversight role as the Department of Energy over these entities includes, firstly, the alignment of the strategy of their strategies and their plans to those of the department and, of course, finally, to those of government. Ensuring that there is a balance between government priorities and the commercial priorities of these entities. So some of them are run as businesses. They make a profit. So we have to make sure that as a department that in their process of making a profit for their own BS financial survival, they never forget the fact that they are an extended arm of government. So they are priorities of government that they have to do. Our other role, oversight role, includes the shareholder board appointments, which is a legislated process where the Minister of Energy has to appoint the boards. The other role is the board participation by departmental representatives. This is also another legislated requirement that representatives from the department officials sit on all of the state-owned entity boards. So this is another way of us protecting our oversight as a department. The monitoring and evaluation of entities' performance, we have a unit within the department that is responsible for that, that talks to the management of the process from the strategic plan session to their quarterly reports right up to the annual report, as well as also the when they come and present to the parliamentary members at a later stage. The other function that we also perform is the oversight on the electrification program as defined in the Division of Revenue Act. This applies to both ESCOM, which is Section 7, and the municipalities, which is Section 6. So that briefly is our oversight role as a Department of Energy in terms of our SOEs. The transfers are just listed on slide number 35. I'm not going to talk much on that because our acting CFO will go through the details of that. How much of that $3.4 billion you've got, is how much of it is actually part of the total budget for the Department of Energy. But basically, these are the entities that we transfer money to on an annual basis. We transfer to NEXA, to NNR, EDI, and INEP. In conclusion, Chairperson and honorable members, as a support services, we have a responsibility to the Department of Energy. We have a responsibility to invest in building a formidable team energy. That's what our minister calls us, team energy. We need a team that is able to effectively discharge our responsibilities, serve the masses of our people, and make a difference in their lives. That chairperson concludes the first part of our presentation. With your permission, I'll ask Mr. Mgoni to quickly take the committee on the progress on the split of the Department of Minerals and Energy, focusing, of course, on the side of the energy.
That's fresh, it's A or G, because it's two brothers, so...
Oh, it's G, sorry.
G, okay.
Yeah, it's G. That is George Michel. Yeah, Chairperson, just to take you through the... you know, an update on the split process. Yes. You'll remember, Chairperson, that, you know, around May, the President announced the split of the old Department of Minerals and Energy into two portfolios, that is the Department of Energy and the Department of Mineral Resources. At the national level, a national macro reorganization committee was established to oversee the process of reorganizing government into government, as well as government departments. And various work streams were established to focus on specific functions such as organizational scoping, HR audits, change management and communication, labor and legal services, infrastructure and assets, ICT, finance and budgets. Internally in the department, we did establish, you know, an internal steering committee for the split, and we've also established, you know, a work stream committee, which was appointed by the Director General and mainly led by the directors of the various key responsibilities within the Department of Minerals and Energy. And as a starting point, we compiled a consolidated a transitional plan. And through this transitional plan, we are in a position to monitor progress in as far as, you know, moving from the old DME and coming up with the two new departments of energy and the Department of Mineral Resources. And these work streams on a biweekly basis, say on a bi-monthly basis, they are required to present a progress report to the internal workstream committee meeting, which is chaired by myself. And, Chairperson, following the two strategic planning sessions for the two departments, we did adopt a process approach in developing structures, and these structures were submitted to the two executing authorities, that is the Minister of Energy as well as the Minister of Mineral Resources, and they did approve them because they were in line with the mandate of the department. And the allocation of funding for newly created positions was obtained, but because of financial constraints, we identified only those critical positions that will enable us to set up the two departments. But so far, those interim structures have also been approved by the two ministers, and we are busy implementing those. All new positions within support services, which is one component that was mostly affected by the split process, have been job evaluated and job profiled. You'll remember, Chairperson, that in terms of the DPSA directives, there is a job evaluation policy which government departments are expected to implement so as to ensure that, you know, there is equal pay for equal work done by individual employees in the public service. We have so far finalized the matching and placement of all employees, and that was finalized on the 12th of March 2010. We have issued formal placement letters to all employees, and two PESAL systems have been created, and all the employees and support services have been placed on two separate PESAL systems as on the 15th of March 2010. I'm saying this because it will be illegal for any person now to draw you know, a salary from the budget of any government department where that person is not formally placed and approved by competent authorities. We have finalized that. Mr. Masamol, can you go back, please? I think we're a bit too fast. The budget systems were also posted on the 23rd of March 2010, and the first and successful test salary run was done on the 2nd of April 2010. We did this, Chairperson, to ensure that come a pay day, which is the 15th, everybody receives his or her salary in accordance with his or her placement in any of the new departments. Reports are continuously being generated, and any anomalies between BES and PESAL, which are the two systems, are being attended to prior to the 15th of April 2010. Next. Recommendations for placements of the affected employees have been approved by both DGs, and formal placement letters have been issued to all affected employees in support services. And we are continuously receiving confirmation or acceptance letters of the placements, and the final date for receiving those will be the 15th of April this year. In cases where people are not happy or satisfied with the results of the placement, an appeal process will commence. Next. Then all vacant but funded positions are being advertised in the national media in line with the public service regulations. You'll remember that, you know, for those that have read Sunday Times, a number of positions in the new Department of Energy, particularly at senior management level, were advertised. And we're calling for, you know, those persons that believe that they will make the grade, I mean, they'll make the grade to apply for those positions, and the selection process will kick in. All employees that have been placed in both departments are eligible to apply for higher or lateral transfers, and advertising of positions is being done in line with the departmental recruitment and selection policy. Chairperson, as I've indicated, both departments have been created on PESAL. I'm saying this because it is really a process. You know, somebody might think that creating a department on PESAL is an easy thing. It is not. And the identification and grouping of HR administration activities for both departments was finalized on the 31st of March and implemented on the 1st of April. This relates to, you know, HR administration activities such as service benefits, leave, medical aid schemes, subsidies, and so on. A review of the current DMEHR plan was commenced on the 1st of April and will be finalized by the end of June 2010, as well as the review of the current HR policies, that is those that were applicable to the old DME department, you know, as well as practices, delegations of authority in terms of the Public Service Act, the public service regulations from the executing authority to the new head of department and from the head of the department to other employees in the department, and this will be finalized by the end of May 2010. Chairperson, on that note, thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, good afternoon. I'm Tidiso Makubela. I'm heading DDG responsible for hydrocarbons and energy planning. The presentation itself in front of you will be done by Mr. Mkhize, who is the chief director responsible for hydrocarbons. However, I thought that I just need to sketch the current situation, give members an honest assessment of what is facing us in the country, and what we believe are the questions that the country needs to be grappling with at this time. The program itself, Hydrocarbons and Energy Planning, is made up of the licensing branch, which is responsible for issuing licenses for manufacturing, for wholesale, as well as for retail in the liquid fuel sector. They also are responsible for ensuring that there is compliance with the conditions of those licenses. The second sub-program is the Hydrocarbons Policy and Infrastructure, which is then responsible for all policy interventions as well as the planning of infrastructure that is required. The third sub-program is the Energy Planning, and that one is responsible for what is indicated there, the Integrated Energy Plan. But mainly we see our task as being responsible for ensuring that the South African economy remains competitive. We do have a mandate, a prime mandate of energy security. However, we never lose sight of the fact that this economy needs to remain competitive. If I can just sketch the current situation, we have in South Africa aging infrastructure. We have no crude oil to talk of other than the oil or the liquid fuels that come from coal as well as gas. There are pressures on the energy sector to reduce emissions, and the liquid fuel sector is not immune to these pressures. These are global pressures. In the country, we have a declining skills base, and the liquid fuel sector is not immune to this. We have inadequate representativity in the sector, inadequate diversity of sources, and inadequate coordinated planning. So the presentation that you will hear will be responding to the current situation. But then what do we see as a strategic thrust of the department in this regard is to improve the planning, is to make sure that there is a climate for investors to reinvest in liquid fuel infrastructure. We need to modernize our liquid fuel. We need to diversify our sources of supply to include gas. And we need to push on with the transformation of the sector. And the try as much as possible to pursue a policy of aggressively trying to secure crude oil resources for our country. Just to conclude on this part, there have been developments that have taken place since we concluded the strat plan. Two major international oil companies, BP and Shell, have announced that they will be exiting a number of countries in the continent, of course, with the exception of South Africa, and in the case of BP, it's South Africa and Mozambique. But we live in a situation now where our neighbors, as well as the subcontinent, there is a lot of insecurity because of the pulling out of these two giants. But I must indicate that in some respects, in many of these countries, Petronas, through Engen, has stepped in and is actually increasing its its business in the rest of the continent. The high crude oil prices seem to be on their way back, and these are the challenges that we would like also the committee to guide us as we implement strategies to try and deal with these. The questions that we always ask ourselves is whether the consumer is paying a fair price for fuel, always, because that determines the competitiveness of our economy, as well as the livelihood, the quality of life of South Africans. The other question is how much imports are we able to live with? We are currently importing a lot of petrol and diesel. This is the situation that we were not in about six years ago. How much of these imports are we going to be able to sustain? Because they have an impact on balance of payment. And the other question is, should the state not catalyze new investment then in the refining sector to be able to respond to this? But having said that, I will hand over to Mr. Mkhize to then take the committee through some of the interventions that we believe will begin to answer these questions, and these are in the start plan.
Thank you, DDG. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Muzi Mkhize, has already been explained. There is just one issue that I won't be referring to much, the issue that talks to the international relations and cooperation with respect to energy resources, because it becomes key, as you have also noted, that we don't have crude of our own. And when it comes to gas and other resources it's in the hydrocarbon space, we are constrained, save the fact that we've got plenty of coal. And then we've got to deal with the issues that relate to climate, as we all understand that the impact of energy use in the environmental space. The interventions that I'll refer to, one is the one of integrated energy planning strategy. We'll look at the strategy which will form the basis upon which the plan itself, the IEP as we call it, will be buttressed from. And then with that, it will also incorporate the issue of the IRP, which is mainly focusing on electricity. So with that, we think that plan will be able to consider that independent forms of energy. By the end of the year, of this financial year, we should have been done with that. Already with the energy plan, we've got the funding now to also do the modeling that goes with that. The fuel specifications and standards. We will proceed with the fuel specifications and standards, and there's already work done in consulting the key stakeholders like the SAPIA, South African Petroleum Industry Association, and also we've had meetings with NAMSA. An interdepartmental task team composed of National Treasury and DTI, amongst others, has already been formed. We look at this in view of also the fact that there would be additional investment required for the existing refineries to meet the more stringent specifications in line with the climate change challenges that we face globally. Then the LPG price regulation, this is an imminent thing because of the outcry from the public for the price to be kept reasonable, because there was an outcry that the price was too exorbitant. And we have done the regulations. We hope that from maybe next month we'll be able to, once we have surmounted the technical hurdles and legal hurdles, we'll be able to promulgate. The fuel pricing framework, as you know, that there was in 2007, December, there was the biofuels national strategy, industrial strategy, which was supposed to assist the biofuels to take off. This has not happened in the way that was envisaged. Part of the problem is that the biofuels industry, when the fossil must be go into comparison with crude oil. When the crude oil price goes up, then it makes it competitive for the biofuels industry. And we all know that in 2007, the price went up to close to 150, then it just went down after that. So the challenge is to have a proper support mechanism, and that we're busy doing and looking at the specifically the Cradock project, which is looking at sugar beet in discussion with SEF, which is one of our one of our SOEs. So we hope that we'll have some. We're looking forward to having a framework developed by the end of this financial year. We'll also amend the Petroleum Products Act. There are challenges with respect to the amendment of the Act, as we would like to tighten up also the monitoring and enforcement of specifications and compliance to the Act as a whole, to look at that. And then the charter, there will also be a review of the charter, which I won't necessarily call the charter, maybe one we better refer it as a new PE dispensation for the sector, because we've got the charter annexed to the Act and therefore making it law. But we kind of do these two as two separate exercises. And then the National Energy Act of 2008 enabled integrated energy planning and ensure security. What we are going to do there, because for one to have proper planning, we also have seen also data provision as an Achilles heel in most of the African countries, including ourselves, where sometimes to get information for an African country, you must go to the USA database. So it's important for us to get data for proper planning going forward, and for integrated planning also to link up with the demand sector. And in this regard, we'll promulgate regulations to mandate the provision of data to enable energy planning in an integrated fashion. The field specifications I've already alluded to, and then we still think that we're on track for the promulgation of a roadmap. We're still within this year, because what we're looking at is that it will take some time. We need to have a roadmap that tells the industry this is the direction that we are taking, because we cannot say tomorrow comply with this particular specification. And it is those issues that we are also busy talking with the industry about. And I think from our side, the other thing that we'll also engage upon, if you can just move to the next one. Yeah, it's a duplication, just move. Yeah. I've spoken about the review of the liquid fuels charter, which will usher in a new empowerment dispensation for the liquid fuels industry. We have not achieved the kind of breakthrough that we was envisaged, as there was encouragement of the transformation of the sector, which is a challenge we still face, and also allowing new entrants into the sector. We still have got the challenges of vertical integration also, where you find that you can have a wholesaler, but it's like, because they are vertical integrated, you still have got a wholesaler buying from another wholesaler, and therefore not really enabling them to be competitive enough. And the issue of being competitive is key. Then we looking at the revision of strategic stocks policy. Strategic stocks really deal with issues of catastrophe, where you've got maybe a regional or a particular area, a continental problem, they say, in issues like where you've got wars and all that, and then you find that you don't have supply coming into the country. So we want to develop a policy to be able to store our crude oil as well as products, because currently we only have stocks for crude oil, but we also need to have for products, so that we are able to still run our country and also run other strategically important functions in the country during those periods. So with that one, we are busy now consulting our sister departments in this regard. And then the current economic environment is not conducive for us just to go on buying the stocks, but we should find ways of phasing it in and accumulate stocks.
the development of an energy modeling system for South Africa as a tool to develop the IEP, as I've alluded to the fact that we already have the budget has been allocated for this function, and we'll commence and do something that is not necessarily for the U.S. or for Norway or for any other country, but we'll have something tailor-made for South African conditions. And then the development of an appropriate pricing mechanism for the rest of that accounting throughout this liquid fuels value chain to promote the appropriate behavior in respect of investment, where we don't want people to end up investing in maybe more service stations when what we need is the logistical chains to be able to get products from the refineries to the service stations themselves. Mr. Steed is also here. Will note that we still have problems in terms of the provision of data from the industry, because we wanted in a specific format which they didn't really have. So, but we are making some progress in this regard, and our plan is that by the turn of this calendar year we should have this system in place. And then the development of integrated energy centers, it helps to contribute to the eradication of poverty, part of also addressing poverty in general and energy poverty in particular. In the presidential poverty nodal areas that were identified, and we are putting these integrated energy centers. They serve with information just to inform the public in terms of awareness campaigns, and also they help to, at the moment they are more towards liquid fuels, but we're also looking at having LPG and other forms of energy as we are able to bring them on board. And I think the challenges that we face are still the issues of budgetary constraints, and also, as you know, that it's been alluded earlier by my colleagues that we are busy in the formation of the department, issues of also personnel and the support also in terms of our systems, as well as the support personnel are still being brought in. The data availability, as I've alluded to, and the understanding of energy issues, and otherwise we still need to do a lot of campaigns also in terms of awareness campaigns, educational campaigns to the general public, and other external factors that relate to energy availability, pricing, that could shift our focus during the year. As we get increases in the price of crude oil, as the DG has alluded to, that also tends to shift our focus and make us change our plans along the line. Thank you.
Chair. DDG. Honourable members and staff, there is some tea and some coffee, but I would love us to carry on with the program. So if you can use minimum, bring down your level of noise to no decibels while you are helping yourself there. You can go and help yourself while we carry on. Thanks, DDG.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I'll take you through the electricity, nuclear, and clean energy aspect. I'll try and speed it up a little bit, just so that you don't get bored. The strategic objectives are as indicated. By and large, we have a supply-demand balance. As you are aware, we went into load shedding in 2008, so we tried to ensure that we don't have that kind of problem again. And we do that by diversifying the primary energy mix, by creating incentives for energy efficiency and demand side management. But we also recognize that we need to deal with the so-called last leg of the value chain, which is the distribution sector. Just in terms of our programs, integrated resource planning is the most topical one at the moment, in terms of which we're going to pronounce on a 25-year plan regarding the generation technologies that we will introduce. We're trying to introduce independent power producers,
which is the private sector participation aspects. I have mentioned energy efficiency incentives. We call it the standard offer. There is a 27 billion rand backlog in terms of the maintenance of distribution assets, which we're trying to address, which is the rehabilitation program, and then the actual structural adjustment issue relating to the declaration of the rate. In terms of the detail, one of the or some of the policy objectives of government regarding electricity generation is that carbon emissions have put us in a very bad league. I think we're about number 15 or so in the world. We're trying to mitigate additional carbon emissions. We're wanting to improve supply adequacy, as I've indicated. We're wanting to diversify, but we're also wanting to take advantage as we diversify of the import opportunities, particularly in Mozambique, because it's cleaner, and also on the Western Limb, because it also tends to be cleaner. The introduction of private sector generators for independent power producers has been a serious problem, mainly because of the referee player role that has come place. And one of the enablers that has been identified is the creation or the establishment of an independent system and market operator in the short term, because we do have some generating opportunities that we're wanting to take advantage of, like yesterday. I must also hasten to add that when we talk about the independent system and market operator, we're not talking about the privatization of any aspect of the electricity sector. Basically, what it means is that we're trying to take out that functionality which is currently embedded within Eskom. We're trying to take it out of Eskom through the creation of a separate entity rather than the actual privatization as such. But having said that, the ability to introduce, or rather to introduce an electricity market down the line is a possibility that can only happen once we have an independent system operator. But that's not the scope of this process. You might have already heard about the solar water heating program, a massified one, in other words, in terms of which we hope to install 1 million within the next 4 years. We recognize that we can only do that if we provide certain financial incentives or a rebate, which is linked to the kilowatt hour savings. So as opposed to the common approaches at the moment where the capital cost is subsidized, we're wanting to link the rebate to the savings rather than the actual capital required. The standard offer will address this particular issue, and we believe that the standard offer, which is an incentive, when you say the standard offer, incidentally, it refers to a rebate per savings achieved. So perhaps we would say 50 cents for every kilowatt hour that you save, and that would apply in respect of the solar water heating program. We have another program in the industrial sector called a power conservation program, and then there is a big program in relation to the more than 100,000 buildings that we believe government owns, in terms of which we can improve energy efficiency in that space. But linked to that is that we believe that energy efficiency interventions are not just about balancing supply and demand, but that we can create sustainable jobs in the short term, which are of a very high quality. I have mentioned the last leg in the value chain, which relates to distribution, and we all know some of the problems that it faces. One of the short-term interventions that we're putting on the table at the moment is the Intensive Network Rehabilitation Program. We have what is called the ADAM program, in terms of which we believe that unless the distribution distribution infrastructure is rehabilitated, irrespective of what we do on the generation side, we will still have the same problems. In terms of that, we're trying to do two things, and I have mentioned that it's at the structural adjustment side, but it's also the regulatory side. Structurally, we're trying to introduce a constitutional amendment which is specifically carved out to only talk to the electricity and perhaps the water issues. I believe water is also the same kind of challenge. And that constitutional amendment would enable national government to have additional, or if you like, specific ability to intervene in terms of the way that the sectors in Schedule 4B are regulated, but also in terms of the creation of the rates themselves. About a week ago, Eskom applied for a World Bank loan, and one of the biggest problems that we faced was to motivate why additional coal-fired power stations for base load capacity needed to be built. We see nuclear as one of the alternative options, which will yield a much cleaner and less carbon-intensive option. But in order to do that, we need to improve governance in the nuclear sector specifically. Specifically, in terms of ensuring that we create or we stimulate and start the capacity within the country, we need to make decisions regarding the nuclear fuel cycle itself. In other words, from the mining of uranium to its enrichment for power purposes and so on. We also need to unblock some of those regulatory issues that would facilitate that process. Incidentally, the integrated resource plan process will also determine just how much baseload power and perhaps nuclear power specifically we will require. And we see these things as working hand in hand. The issue of industrialization and localization, in other words, that if it's going to be a lot of billions that we require, we must not export all of those jobs, but we must try and do it locally. Funding of nuclear programs is obviously a big challenge. We're struggling with a coal-fired power station at the moment. You can imagine the kind of funding implications that would go along with a nuclear program. So we're saying that we are currently addressing those issues in order to ensure that, you know, we address all of those concerns that stakeholders might have. The nuclear or radioactive waste management policy of 2005 has led to the establishment of a waste disposal institute, and we are currently in the process of getting it listed in terms of the PFMA so that we can then make it operational. There are transitional arrangements with NEXA in terms of which the issue of nuclear waste, particularly if you're going to generate a lot of power potentially from nuclear sources, that the issue of nuclear waste is addressed adequately. In terms of the peaceful use of nuclear energy, as you might well be aware, that nuclear security and non-proliferation are a big issue. There are regulations that are being developed in order to introduce what is called design basis threat, and the idea around that is to ensure that all the threats that could obtain in a nuclear powered environment, if you like, you know, are dealt with through this this process. Okay, just in terms of some of the other processes that we're doing to support some of our activities is that we also are aligned and we also subscribe to a whole lot of nuclear energy initiatives, both in the continent and globally as well, one of which is the establishment of the African Commission on Nuclear Energy, in terms of which the Pelindaba Treaty came into force in July 2001. If I move on to clean energy, which is actually renewable energy and energy efficiency, the energy efficiency strategy of 2005 made or pronounced specific targets, one of which was demand reduction of 12% by 2015, 15% of which would come from the industrial sector. In 2005, we had not perhaps anticipated that we'd have a big problem in 2008. And as I might have already indicated, this is perhaps the only hope that we have of balancing supply and demand. And it also happens to be a focus area that will yield very many jobs. You might want to, you might remember that it was a voluntary process in 2002 or thereabouts when we signed the Energy Efficiency Accord, in terms of which 43 companies voluntarily reduced their energy intensity. We are now moving beyond that, and we're wanting to develop a monitoring and verification system within a more mandatory energy efficiency program. This would also happen hand in hand, and in other words, the industrial program that would be mandatory would happen hand in hand with a municipal energy efficiency intensive program. And down the line, I will dwell on the solar water heating program and what we're doing around the solar. If you can go back, Martin. There is also an additional incentive that relates to the tax side of things. I mentioned the financial incentive. The financial incentive would be funded from the electricity tariff, but over and above that, the Income Tax Act has been amended in terms of which issues or other mechanisms like accelerated depreciation would be available to those projects that would improve energy efficiency amongst others. We have a target that was set in the Renewable Energy White Paper in 2003 of 10,000 gigawatt hours by 2013. This represents 5% of the energy mix, and you might have read in the newspapers that that target is under threat. One of the issues or one of the programs that we have implemented in order to ensure that this does happen is the solar water heating program with a target of 1 million by 2014. There are a whole lot of other initiatives, one of the most exciting being the Working for Energy initiative, in terms of which we intend to harness what is called alien plant and use that as feedstock to generate electricity so that it achieves two objectives, the one being that the alien plant does not compete against humans for water usage, and at the same time that the plant that would have been harvested does not become an environmental problem. My colleague has touched on the issue of biofuels with some of those challenges, but that is being dealt with as part of our program. We have a wind energy program that the wind and the solar energy, or wind and solar energy programs that are incentivized through what we call the Renewable Energy Feed-in Tariff program, and we provide very attractive incentives for those kind of generation technologies. At the moment, where we stand is that the process of promulgating the tariffs has been completed. We have a challenge in relation to the buyer. As you are well aware, Eskom has certain financial problems that need to be resolved before they can buy the power. But if you read that in the context of the creation of an independent system and market operator, we're hoping that the ability to introduce renewable energy through the feed-in tariff will happen sooner rather than later. At the international level, we have partnered with IRENA, which is the International Renewable Energy Agency, so that we can share best practice, technologies, funding opportunities, and so on. The ability to harness all the funding in relation to renewable energy and clean energy interventions is facilitated through the designated national authority, in terms of which projects that are clean and renewable are registered and the resultant carbon emission reduction certificates can be traded through the UNFCCC, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And South Africa is one of those countries that have a designated national authority in place for the promotion of those CDM projects. Currently, at last count, I think we had something like 217 projects that had already been registered, and the ability to attract funding for those projects, you know, has met various success. But I must indicate that it is something that will definitely be intensified, particularly when we start doing the mass solar water heating program, because of the impact on the environment. Just in terms of electrification, perhaps I should leave it to my colleague Martin Masemola to take us through the chair with you, with your permission.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members and colleagues. This part specifically will look at the electrification program, which the intention is, of course, to electrify households and reach universal access. The main focus of the program is the management of the planning process, the funding, and the implementation of the program. And then from there we'll monitor the program in line with the Division of Revenue, PFMA, Electricity Regulation Act, and so on. Basically, I put this picture there to indicate that the funding that we receive for electrification is mainly for the lower part of the business, meaning from the distribution going down. So the funding does not cater for the transmission or generation. So it's mainly to the distribution side, then reticulation, and connecting the household. In terms of the backlog as we have it to date, the backlog, now we have classified it in informal and formal. So informal is areas which are basically not eligible for electrification because they are informal, they have not been proclaimed, and if we electrify them, we will probably have to remove that infrastructure at a later stage when the area gets finalized. So we have got the formal backlog, which are existing houses which need electrification. So the total there is 3.3 million households, of which the formal is about 2.2 million that needs to be electrified. Now, there is a target to reach universal access by 2012 for formal households and 2014 for the informal part, which is in line with the eradication of informal settlement strategy by the Department of Human Settlement. So if we have to do that by 2012, if we have to reach universal access by 2012, a total of about 29 billion rand needs to be made available in the program to be able to do that. What we have at this stage is about 2.8 billion rand, which can only result to about 150,000 connections. Now, in terms of the progress to date with the allocation that we have received, this progress is as at the end of February. We have got the municipal program and the ESCOM program. So the municipality received 932 million rand, of which as at the end of February, we have transferred about 76% of that, and the expenditure was sitting at 63%. In terms of the number of connections that they were supposed to deliver, they committed 48,000 and 43,000 was achieved in February. And the actual connections that were done only in the month of February was about 1,000. They had, of course, some projects which were behind, mainly the municipalities. The amount of money that was transferred to them was 100%, and 98% of that was expended by municipalities. In terms of the number of connections that they were supposed to achieve in the 8-9, it was 48,000, but only 43,000 was then achieved. Now, in terms of the ESCOM part of the same electrification program, ESCOM received $1.1 billion, and by February, $897 million was transferred. Was the actual 76% of that was actually spent. In terms of the connection, they committed 98,000, and by the end of February, they did 74,000. So, which means by the end of my delay, the next report which will come will probably cover the remainder of the connections that they had to do. In terms of their schools program, they planned 481, and by April they did 357. Areas where you see no specific numbers is because they don't have schools to electrify. Those areas we have basically completed the program. In terms of going forward in the 2010-11, those are the numbers in terms of our allocation, what we have allocated from the amount that we have. How much we have allocated per province. The total in terms of connections, how much we'll achieve in terms of the plan is 150,000. In order to obviously reach universal access, we need to do about 450,000. But with the current funding constraints and the fact that some areas are difficult and expensive to electrify, the amount that we have, we can only do 150,000 connections per year. In terms of some of it, this is a service delivery, basically, a component in the department, and it forms the greater part of the budget. But at this stage, the electrification program is one of the best-performing service delivery program overall, and treasury can basically attest to that because most of our money we do spend, and we have challenges, of course, in the delivery by municipalities, but we work together with municipalities and ESCOM to make sure that we implement the program. The honest thing is that electrification, rural electrification, is the number one priority for most municipalities, although they're not as basic as water, so they will prefer to have electrification. The biggest challenge at the moment is the provision of bulk infrastructure in mainly deep rural areas, so the building of those long lines and so on. ESCOM program is satisfactorily delivering in terms of the numbers. And then the funding of bulk infrastructure has drastically reduced the connection targets. You see that because we are going deeper into rural areas, it's becoming costly. So even though we have 3 billion rand, we can only do 150,000 connections, and most of the money is basically spent in building the sub-transmission network and bulk and so on. Of course, informal settlement poses a big threat in reaching universal access by the target date. It is a greater number. There is a clear indication that by 2014, it will be very difficult to eradicate those informal settlements. Currently, of course, the funding is not aligned to the target, and there are a lot of pressures on the ground. People are, you know, agitated about the fact that the 2012, 2014, but with the money that you have, you can only do so much, even though you have the capacity to ramp up, but you can only do so much with the yearly increases on our allocations, as it only caters for inflationary implications and so on. But in the short term, those are some of the objectives that we basically set for ourselves to ensure that all the formal households that were built and constructed, we electrify them. We have got a lot of areas where the communities are protesting about lack of service delivery, especially on electricity related matters. And we need to align our strategy with the breaking new ground in urban areas to ensure that we integrate with human settlement when they build structures for informal settlement. all outstanding formal schools will also be prioritized, and we will clean that backlog. Of course, we need to prioritize the building of the bulk infrastructure to open up access in mainly rural areas of the Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo. The upgrading of the bulk projects where electrification cannot proceed without the upgrades will also be prioritized. Thank you very much. I'll leave my colleague to continue.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. I think all my colleagues, as they've been doing their presentations, they've been talking to the last part of the presentation that I'm going to do. That was a shortage of funds, no funding all over. I think all my colleagues touched on that. So what I'm going to take the committee through is just the overall budget allocation versus what we have requested and what we used to have as the programs under the DME. So the first slide there, on your first column, we have indicated what we could have had if our previous year E&E was upheld. But you'll remember, Chair, that after this economic crisis, Treasury has went on and adjust some of the figures to ensure that we can be able to afford what we are able to what we want to do. Now, if you can just go back again a bit, Marty. Yeah. So if you go to the third column, it indicates what did we request to Treasury that can enable us to operate as the new Department of Energy, which was around about 4 billion in total. And we were allocated 5.5 billion. You might think that is a huge increase there, but I must say that that money there is nothing more than the 1.5 billion that we'll be giving to the Transnet for the pipeline in the next MTF period. And therefore, it means our budget has effectively been reduced from the 4.86 billion that we are anticipating, with around about 40 million or so. So that's why most of my colleagues were reiterating the issue of a lack of funding. Next slide. The view in terms of at a program level as well portray the picture that I was indicating. At administration, we just got a little bit of increase in terms of particularly compensation of employees from 68 to 104. It's around about 30 million, which is, if you look at the bigger part of it, is the compensation of our new minister, because was not part of the revised estimates of last year, and our new director general, which takes around about 10 million or so. And the actual increase of salaries that was implemented last year at around 10%. So effectively, we are just in a situation wherein we just can't be able to implement or kickstart the new department as we would have envisaged. Program 2, as I've already indicated, they had around about 54 million last year. So their budget basically increased by a little less than a percent, because the bigger amount is the 1.5 billion there that you see, which is for Transnet. Electricity and nuclear, actually in that one, we have got a very dire situation. I think on the previous figures that they used to have as DME, for goods and services, they used to have around about 37 million. And this year it has went down so badly to 8.8 million. And that is the situation that we are facing there, that we are trying to deal with. The associated services, I think the majority of that money, Mr. Masemula has been talking to, which is 2.8 billion, that will go to electrification. From there, our transfers to our entities like Nexa. So that's where the majority of the funding there goes. Next slide. In terms of, this is the same budget in terms of now, pay economic classifications, just to indicate that in terms of our current payments, that includes goods and services and compensation of employees, we like I've already indicated, we just have a little over 200 million. That is our compensation, our new structure, and then our goods and services. The transfers and subsidies, of course, went up, as I've already indicated. And then in terms of the payment of capital assets, you can see there that we are so severely underfunded, particularly considering the fact that we are, of course, a newly established department, and we have to rework on some of our, we have to create our own IT infrastructure and so on and so forth. So a 4.6 million is really a very little. Next slide. So majority of the money, as I've already indicated, the total is 5.5 billion, and you'll find 2.8 billion, and going to INEP, and then demand side management is around 329 million, and renewable energy is 36 million, energy modeling system at 20 million, and then Transnet pipeline 1.5 billion. If you look closely on those figures, you'll realize that 97% of our budget is transfers, and only 3% is what is left for operations of the department, which is really very, very tight. Next slide. This slide just goes to indicate that the structure that Mr. Mguni was talking about for the new department, if it was to be implemented at once, how much do we need, and versus how much do we have, and then the gap there. But as the DDG indicated, we intend to implement this over the MTEF period. However, there are some very key and critical functions that we would have really wanted to implement with immediate effect on the current financial year. And that then is going to be part of our budget adjustment submissions to the Treasury, the process that is going to be happening somewhere in July, wherein we will submit our new request to try and solicit the funds that can really at least get us on a little bit better stand than we are now. Next slide. So that is the structure. The current, Mr. Mguni indicated that after we realize that we are so severely out of funds, versus our approved structure, we had to come up with an interim structure that will be able to make us operate come the 1st of April. And therefore, we went and do a structure like that, and then it was costed per program, the way you see there. So as it is now, our current compensation of employees out of the 202 million that I've indicated is 133 million, and therefore operations are left only with 69 million. Next slide. That's where I end. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, DDG and the department. Is there anyone that wants to add on the presentation? No one. DDG, you want to add on the presentation? Oh, okay. Honorable members, now it's your time to ask the questions. Well, it seems that you guys have been doing so well that I can't believe there's Honorable Lee, Honorable Lunguni, Honorable Mambi, Sinclair, Honorable Sinclair, and Honorable Valmere. Honorable Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, yeah, it's been a lengthy and comprehensive presentation and quite difficult to deal with in such a short period of time. I've got a couple of questions, but it really doesn't cover everything that I think I should be asking. The current progress with regard to the solar water heaters, progress towards the 1 million, last time we met it was at an abysmally low figure. Have you got a current figure there? The question of concentrated solar power, it was mentioned in passing at one point in the presentation. What is the progress there with regard to some kind of strategic partner to develop CSP? One of the most disturbing things about all the presentations this afternoon has been the length of time it's taking to set up your department. We're talking about lack of money, resources, it's a year down the road. We're now talking, I gather, if I'm correct, and please clarify for me, another 2 years before you're fully operational. And then possibly the new government in 2 years after that will then change the structure all over again. So that really has been something that has concerned me throughout, that so much of your effort is being spent on creating this department. I'd like to hear a little bit more about the Craddock project in terms of biofuels and why it's an SOE, how that decision was made. In terms of the rebate based on savings for solar usage, I assume particularly solar water, I'd like to know in general terms how that those savings are going to be measured. To me, it sounds like a nightmare and open to a huge amount of manipulation by the consumer. You talk about nuclear governance needing some serious overhaul. Does that mean that the current governance that's in place is a danger to us in terms of our single nuclear power station? Or are we fairly safe? I'm concerned that you talk about a serious overhaul of governance when we already have a nuclear power station. Is it safe? Working for energy, you're talking about, working for water has been working for a number of years very successfully with the eradication of alien plant species, but I can't see how you're going to take wattle trees and all sorts which are spread over the Drakensberg and now try and use that as fuel for power generation. I'd love to hear more. I think it's a great idea, but I'm just practically, I can't understand how it might work. And then the one of my personal favorites is $1.5 billion for the Transnet pipeline. What proportion of the cost of that pipeline is that $1.5 billion? It's just wreaking havoc in my home area at the moment, but I'm interested on what the costs are there. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. The crude oil side of things, in terms of Mike Stead's presence here and the concerns that were raised by NGEN with regard to supply of crude oil, that the berth in Durban Harbour, which was unoperational, is that now back in operation? The World Cup's around the corner. The refineries were okay to produce, but the distribution to Gauteng and to the new Durban airport, is that all under control now? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Honourable Ngoni.
Thanks, Chair. I think Honourable Mazambane has covered me on the use of alien plants for energy. Just want to hear more about what you intend using alien plants for energy. My second question, Chair, is on the use of nuclear The director mentioned that processing of nuclear for peaceful means, what Iran is doing at the moment. Currently, the UN, the US, they're pushing that Iran should stop that. Do we foresee this policy changing in future if we're going to use nuclear enrichment, you know, uranium enrichment for energy generation? Won't it actually deteriorate perhaps to, you know, using it for war, so such that? Mr. Chair, on the issue of wave technology, there's a technology that currently they're experimenting on in the U.S. They call it the wave technology to generate energy using the oceans or the sea to generate energy. Are we looking into that, or is it too expensive, or what are the inequalities concerning wave energy, or what they call wave technology? And on the shortage of fuel, we've got one of the world technology in Sasol, you know, converting coal to oil. What's the possibility of upscaling that oil, actually using that in bulk so that we substitute for the shortage of diesel and petrol instead of importing more? Thanks.
Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair. The one of nuclear energy has been covered by Mgunya. I'll ask the second one. It's in relation to the interim structure that has been costed before the 1st of April so that they can get the funding. The strategic plan is a direct response to what was raised in the state of the nation in this fourth democratic parliament. So my question is, if you have these challenges in terms of your funding, the interim structure, is it going to be able to respond to the strategic plan as per the state of the national address for this democratic parliament? Because we'll come back in future and try to check how far have you gone, only to find that you'll have some challenges. So I'm posing this question so that as early as now we can be able to understand whether are you going to be equal to the task with the current organogram that we have in relation to what has been raised by the president that is going to be done by this fourth democratic parliament. Thanks.
Honorable Sinclair.
Chairperson, the liberals and the communists asked all the questions, so I don't have any questions. Chairperson, yeah, just the first two remarks. The first one is, I think we've been bombarded with a lot of information and so on and so forth. And I really believe that we must, as a committee, engage the department also on a different level. We have the plan to have some strategic session as committee and so on. So just to get a better understanding of many of these things that's been presented to us in a relative short space. So firstly, I want to suggest that. Then secondly, Chair, it's we understand the difficulties of the minister and so on, but it's very difficult to engage on a policy level with officials on these issues. Now, we this morning had the economic development minister was fortunately with us and so on. And many of these issues is linked to the mandate of the Department of Economic Development. And on that level, I think it's necessary also to engage the minister on some of these issues that's been raised here today by the officials. And certainly I don't believe they can respond on that. So maybe the message is that hopefully the minister will also come to our committee at some stage or the other. But then coming to the specific issues, what was the rationale behind the breakdown of 50% to this department and 70% to the other one? Was it based on, I don't know, what was the rationale? Because it just seems, in terms of the strategic objective of this committee, it seems, and the times that we live in, it just seems a bit skew. And I share my the concern of my alliance partner here in terms of the issue about why does it need to take so long? You know, really, we heard the explanation from the gentleman, but certainly, I mean, you're the head of the task team that deals with this issue. Can't it be quicker? Can't it be, why does it need to take so long to implement that whole issue? Then the second issue is the one about the biofuel strategy. You know, at the moment, farmers is producing maize, mealies, at a loss of about 1,000 rand a ton. First remark. Second remark is a lot of investment, pre-investment, went into some of these business plans. And some people even lost a lot of money because government didn't come to the table in terms of the strategy. Can't we make the strategy, can't we put it quicker into place? And we understand the dynamics of this, the food safety, security, and all those things. But once again, it's a policy issue. From government side, can't we enhance the rollout of that biofuel strategy? The next issue is the issue about the energy mix. Now, I said this morning, and I want to say it again, the problem with this government is, once again here today, they say one thing, and they do another thing. The best example is now this World Bank loan. Yeah, all the papers show we're going to go this road. What do they do? They go this road.
Switch off your phone, please. You can't contact Marcia Lakota now. Switch off your phone, please.
No, I think it's the World Bank that responded now. But really, I mean, if we're sincere about this, and it's got nothing to do with the officials, I just don't hope they respond. They're not supposed to respond. But it's a policy issue. And I don't know, it just doesn't make sense. For how long are we going to say we for clean energy, we for alternate energy, and then we go and we do this other thing? Which brings me to the issue about the so-called IPP. You know, I see here there was the president also made the remark, no, we will move away from Eskom and so on. But this IPP must get approval, or people that's interested in this alternate or independent energy producer must pass the regulator. And I don't know, DG, if I'm wrong, but the regulator will determine, firstly, what is going to be the price, and secondly, where you're going to, who they're going to allocate the licenses. And unfortunately, in this environment where we operate, and I'm sorry to raise it, the ANC's got a history of just be very specific about who gets a license and who doesn't get the license. And up till the time we move away from those things, we're going to struggle with this. Then the last issue is about the one about the shortfall. I anticipate that you want to raise the shortfall with the adjustment appropriation bill. But what if the Minister of Finance says, sorry? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sukwe. Honorable Kamere.
Thanks, Chair. I come from Zulu Natal, King Andrew, and I see most of the people here come from the split department that was formerly DME. I'm trying to use my arithmetic here, and also following on the 87 Now, if the rest of the members come from the old DME, I would assume they take the salary of OP and push it this side, just like that. That is what I assume, and everybody, Makubela, Kabazela, Mgruni, everybody, and then Kwabin. So they're not creating a new salary. And they would add the salary of the minister and the DG, because they're not there. So my arithmetic tells me it's not a train smash, because it's just a shift of those people with their allocation. But I just want some clarity there. Why would we have a shortfall, whether in administration or human resources? Is it very little, because it will be very little added staff, or the amount, not very little. The amount wouldn't be that significant. And also add my voice that I really do feel that the department should have been running by now, personally, not by June. All the way from May, last year, it should have been running. It has been said it will be running by June, and in the MTEF period, there will be 80%. That is also questionable. Even if in the MTEF would be around about 80%, then it's a challenge. Now, Chairperson, I think I'll forward most of the questions, because I've got a lot of questions. And Mr. Makubela said a number of scary things, you know, about aging infrastructure and all that, and put some goosebumps. But I want to pick on just a few. One, whether we'll reach the Millennium Development Goals on electrification. Because that's the issue of service delivery. We need to go out to people and say, yes, come 2014, we are done. And I still want to see where we're putting in these 1 million solar heaters or what have you. I just want to pay a personal visit to these areas where they are fitting them and see whether the numbers are declining or increasing. I don't mind even spending a day. Kabazela, you talked about a new empowerment dispensation. Is that on the, I was going to see 4BE, 4BEE, it's something new now. The other questions, I think I'll ask them personally, you know, outside. And the figures, I just wanted to check. Someone gave us the specs here about these are the backlogs. And these are the households that have electrified. Where do you get these figures from? Now, I've got a report that comes from KwaZulu-Natal. That doesn't talk of the 650,000. It talks to another figure. Where do you get them from? Do you get them from? I don't know. I don't want to say. Lastly, my arithmetic again. I saw in the presentation that the Free State in Mbuli, Honorable Mbuli, planned to electrify 2,237. Homesteads, and they ended up doing 4,011. That's a miracle. Why can't we use the same miracle with all the other provinces? I mean, why would you plan to do 2,000 and budget for 2,000 and you end up doing 4? I think we should transfer that to KwaZulu-Natal or so. Tin Mazamba. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Honorable members,
may I just ask about the peaking station under construction in the Ladysmith area? Because you emphasized the use of local labor and skills and so on. but it would appear to us that very little local is being used in that project, particularly by CMC, who's the lead contractor in the tunneling at the moment.
Lady Smith, I think. Is it Lady Smith, you said? Lady Smith, yeah. I think for the interest of time, DG, if there's any more questions, I'll put my questions in writing. You may proceed to answer, please.
Thank you, Chairperson and honored members. I'll just make a quick comment on the issue of the structure and the establishment of the department, and I'll request the various managers to focus on the rest of the questions, asking the CFO to talk about the rationale on the 30-70 split, and of course Mr. Mgunu will take us on the process of the establishment in more detail. But I think, honored members, you need to be aware of the fact that the actual announcement came in May. The determination of the department, which is one of the processes that have to be followed, where we have to go to I think it actually came to Parliament, where there was a determination that this as a department that could not be formed. That is a process that we had to wait for before we could implement anything in the department. That came, I think, about two, three months after that. And during that period, the Department of Energy was part of all the departments put together that were split or newly established, or that whole process, what you call the macro organization of the government, of the state. So the time frames that you were abiding to as the Department of Energy were actually the national time frames, not the ones for the department. We had to abide by that. We had to get the Department of DPSA to be part of the process with their processes. So that's how most of the time was left. But when you consider the amount of time we've had, the department has been established, if you consider when the president established the department and the appointment of the ministers, it's actually been about 10 months. And during that 10 months, as soon as the determination was made, the Department of Energy was in existence. The only problem was that at that particular time, we did not have the same budget, independent budget. So in other words, that's the time when we went to the process of saying that because there's only one budget vote, which was given to the Department of Energy, and because of the government structures, we don't split votes during the course of the financial year. So we had to share that vote up until the end of the financial year. That's why we refer to it as the effective split, which is 1st of April. That is when the Department of Energy had its own budget and mining had its own budget. But what we have done during that process, after the determination of the department, what we have done, DOE has existed in the sense that the line function had moved to DOE because they were line function, they were DOE, they had nothing to do with mining. However, the problematic area was the area of the support services because as it is now, we as support services are actually supporting two independent departments. So the decision was taken by the minister, two ministers and the two DGs was that the DG of Minerals and Energy, because he was now moving to the Department of Mineral Resources, he moved with the budget, with the whole PEF, as well as the support services. And then we were offering a service now to the Department of Energy because they had no PEF at the time. They said they didn't even have an accounting officer because the accounting officer from DME was now the accounting officer of the DMR. So that is how we've been operating over the past 6 months or so, where we were actually, the Department of Energy was there. It was operating to its ministers, the DG was appointed during the process, and that it was there. It's just that it was getting the support services from, in terms of the agreement between the two ministers and the two DGs from the Department of Mineral Resources, which was now a hosting department. The issue of the actual establishment, I don't think there's much that we as government departments can do unless we are given the money. Because for us to even go to an extent of coming back to say now, this is the structure that we would recommend to the minister, and the minister approved, and then the minister of DPHA to concur. This is a structure that speaks to the mandate of the Department of Energy. We went through that process. which of course was quite a tough process. I must say, the team worked very hard. But first of all, we were not allowed to use consultants to do the work for us. So we had a team from HR. We had a team from HR who had to service two departments. We had a team from HR who had to establish the two departments, at the same time make sure that things are happening. So we had to go through that whole process to come and get things done. But the long and short of it is that we have established the Department of Energy. It's working. It's there. The only difference now, the 21st of April, it had its own path and it had its own money. And, of course, the issue of the moving of the people from one department to the other. There isn't much we can do unless we have enough budget to address those issues, because we have a situation where, unfortunately, the Department of Minerals and Energy itself, when it was split at the time, it was quite thin itself in terms of support services. It was quite. So we come into a situation where functions are duplicated somehow, because if you need an account clerk, the side, you need an account clerk on the other side, and unfortunately, we've only got one. If you need a DDG on one side, you need a DDG on the other side, but it only got one. So if the DDG moves to one side or the contract moves one side, they move with the salary. But then during that process, then there comes the process of saying that, does the DOE have the money to support those people? If it doesn't, because of the size of this budget, then obviously it has to fall back to DMR where people can be paid, because we're talking about people now and paying the people at the end of the month. So those are kind of the challenges that we've been dealing with in terms of trying to balance the situation. The interim structure has been based only on the funding that you received. Because remember, we presented to them, this is the structure that we would like to implement, which will speak to the mandate of that is given to the minister. But they said, we don't have that money. We're only going to give you less than half of what you're asking for. So we had to respond to that half, that less than half of the team, and said, okay, then in that case then, which structure would make sure that we effectively, like I said, 1st of April, effectively split. And this is the structure that you are using at the moment. And this is the amount of work that you're talking about. It's not a very comfortable environment for all of us, I have to mention. But we're trying our best. Because the only alternative now is to go back to the president. We cannot split because we don't have the money. No, that's not for me.
Due respect, we're speaking comparatively. We've got one new department, economic development. It didn't have OMPI, it didn't have Makubela, it didn't have anybody. When this department was formed, even the minister did not have an office and a deputy minister. And they squatted with the trade and industry. But it's running now. Due respect. That's a new department. Now, this is a split department. So that is why we say, comparatively speaking, we're not hard and fast, but we're just insisting that it should have been running by now.
Okay. They say it's running, and you're not happy with it.
What was reported was that by June, this is what was presented. It will be fully running. That was presented. And that in the MTEF, it will be somewhere between 8 and 90. That is what was presented. So I'm responding to that.
Okay. Just making this a dialogue. I think that there's been a misunderstanding. What I said is that by June, we want to have advertised all funded posts. That's what we're talking about, by June. In other words, we've got this gap now where we said, this is the kitty that we've got in DOE for paying of salaries. These are the positions that we've identified as critical positions, and we've got the money for. But we don't have people, because the people who came from DME were not enough to fill those posts. Some of them went to DMR. So that is what I'm talking about. To say those vacant funded posts have to be advertised and the process completed by the end of the first quarter in terms of that. The issue of the 80%, I'm talking about the availability of the funds now to say, what about the unfunded post? Because now that's where Treasury comes in. That is now the difference between the interim structure and the final structure. This is now for the whole department, not just support services, including the line function. That's what I'm talking about. So we're hoping that that process within the next 2 years, it should be at least 80% complete, but this is highly dependent on what we get from Treasury. Because what we are doing now is that we don't want to have a single funded vacant post. That's what we're working on now. Come the end of the first quarter, we should not have a single vacant but funded post. That's what we're talking about.
Are you happy or not, ma'am?
Yeah.
Okay.
My colleague starting from the bottom there to respond.
I think the where I come in is on the question of the rationale of 70-30 split. I think the bigger confusion there was splitting the entire department versus splitting the support service. So the 70-30 we are talking about only support services. The rationale was, you'll remember that previously when we were DME, energy branches were fairly small. So what we used to split the coffers was to say support line. So if you have got 100 people and 50 of them are at mineral resources and 30 of them are at energy-related programs, then the remaining 20, which is now support, you split it on that portion, which will now be the 50 versus the 30. So that's how we come about to the actual 70-30 split process. But you will remember, Chair, that it will not necessarily mean that you will have the maybe out of the 20 now, basically having the, let me just say, 8 and maybe the 12 remaining going to mineral resources, because it's about the money, as the DPG was saying. So if you have got Mr. Mguni there as a chief director, and then he is then transferred to NH, you might find that because this level is high, it will mean that underneath you will have a serious gap on the operation. So that's how this thing goes around in terms of our operation. I think my two colleagues have echoed the issue of that we are operating and we are running. The only issue that you have now is you have an acting CFO here who must even be authorizing payments when he's on a flight going back to Pretoria, which is firstly, very dangerous, because you can't be doing these processes online remotely, because if this thing is stolen and stuff, it means that if some clever people can be able to authorize those payments, you never know. But in actual fact, we are running. The thing is, if I'm coming to Cape Town to a meeting and there's a payment run to be authorized for salaries, I start in the office, I authorize the payment for the salaries to run, then fly to Cape Town. So that is the issue around the 70-30, and how are we operating. The second question that came to talk to finance was around, if Treasury refused, then what? I think the fact that we are highlighting this issue at this forum is to try and make the honorable members aware so that they can be able to assist us, those who are on the Mincom BAT, a ministerial committee on budget, to be able to sell our problem as well, or to even be able to communicate with the counterparts that sit there. But honestly, if Treasury says no, effectively you can't do a thing, because unfortunately they don't say no and put the money. They talk the figure and put it on your bank account, so you can't do what you don't have. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, well, thank you, Chairperson. There is a question that says, you know, it has taken the department a bit too long to split. That is splitting the old DME into the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Energy. It's unfortunate that maybe the committee was not taken through the options assessment presentation that was done on a number of occasions here in Parliament, because that would have given some clear light as to what is it in, you know, what does it involve to split a department. There are a lot of processes. I've alluded to quite a number of work streams that were established, you know, the things like the organizational scoping work stream, the HR audits, the ICT, the finance and budgets. You know, it's a lot of activities that go. I will circulate, you know, a copy of the transitional plan to the members, or give it to the secretariat so that they can circulate it to the members, so that the members can see, you know, what kind of activities are involved in splitting a department. Because one must also be aware of the fact that when you split an organization, if you remember the post-1994, a lot of government departments did get air qualifications, you know, as a result of assets that were not accounted for, you know, as a result of processes that were not adhered to, as a result of principles that were not observed. So we are not going to go into that trap again. One thing for certain, we've learned very good practice, we do have experience, and we want to ensure that we have a very smooth running transitional phase where we split the Department of Minerals and Energy into two departments. Let me also say this. In as far as this process is concerned, anybody who was participating in this process can, allude to the fact that the way the DME split was managed, you know, a lot of government departments have learned, good practice. And we are confidently saying the Department of Energy is running, the Department of Minerals, of Mineral Resources, it's intact, it's running. Although in terms of capacity, we think we're very thin on the ground, but those that are affected, particularly in support services, are prepared to take the workload because we do have very committed employees. They will double up in some instances, but they are prepared, you know, to face that challenge as committed servants of the state. Thank you very much.
Just on the remark that you have made, that it's a pity that you were in Parliament and you have given. I think the criteria or the fact of the matter was that when the split happened, this department thought that the NCOP is not a House of Parliament, and it only went to the NA, the PPC, Portfolio Committee. And we had problems about that after I've addressed it with the Minister and the Acting DG then. Then they realized, but hey, there's an NCOP as well. It's got the same legal standing as the National Assembly. So I think it's not out of ignorance that the members have asked us. If DOE has done their work correctly and came and briefed this committee about it, members would have understood the point to that effect. But we're going to call you back for a briefing on that because it seems that there is a whole process and you're the expert on it, so we'll call you back for a briefing. DDG, you can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, honorable members. I'm going to deal with some of the hydrocarbons issues, and then some Mr. Cesar will deal with. Just first of all, on the biofuels strategy, we firmly believe that that strategy suffered a timing challenge, in the sense that when it was approved, the strategy was approved by Cabinet, it's when the food prices globally started picking up and when the petrol oil prices started going up. In a way, the oil prices were good for the biofuels industry, but at the same time, the food riots that we saw in Cairo, you know, Egypt and other places over food prices invariably influenced the implementation of the biofuel strategy. There was, I must admit, a slowdown with that realization. Then there was also a decision by cabinet to exclude maize for purposes of ensuring that there isn't impact on, you know, an inflationary impact on staple foods. Now, we believe that there is a need to perhaps, you know, reevaluate the situation and look at whether the conditions have not changed and whether there isn't a need then to revisit that situation. However, there are some investors that have stayed the course, and what they are now asking us to do is to develop a pricing framework. One of the issues I'd like to raise, though, is that the biofuels intervention comes at a time when our liquid fuels infrastructure is constrained. So, for example, if you go to the oil companies and say to them, you know, come up with blending facilities or develop blending facilities or start blending, then the question is that we will be asked is, which one do you want us to prioritize? Do you want us to prioritize the investing in storage capacity for existing, you know, liquid fuels, or you want us to invest in blending infrastructure? And those are very difficult balances to make at this time because we are really constrained. If I can just give an indication, the pipeline from Durban to Johannesburg is basically operating at capacity. So it cannot take any more. You have a break in that pipeline, then perhaps, you know, we have a dire situation in our hands, which then, you know, was the one that really influenced the development of another pipeline. If I can just also move then to the next question on the new multi-product pipeline. The Transnet had wanted to build a 16-inch pipeline. And government then said, well, for security of supply, you need to increase that to 24 inches. And so the 4.5 billion that has been allocated by Minister of Finance is really to cover the additional portion which government mandated Transnet to upscale the pipe to. And I believe that in the long term, that is going to prove to have been a correct decision. You hear from other players that we will be importing quite a lot of product. By the time, in fact, we will be importing up to as much as 25% of our needs by 2015. And the demand will still be inland. So to move that product, you are going to need a pipeline of that capacity. How much is that in terms of the 4.5 billion that's been allocated? Currently, the figures are changing from Transnet side, and this is something that is of concern to the department. It's of major concern, in fact. We are actually engaging together with other departments to see how we can actually begin to look into the escalation of the cost of that pipeline. But in terms of figures, the latest figure is about 15.5 to 16 billion rand. But we would like to intervene there, and because we've been given this mandate, the management, project management, and the project oversight over the project will then reside also with us. We have then the ability through this allocation to intervene there and indicate, you know, our unhappiness with the increase. In terms of distribution infrastructure, Durban Airport I think it's a situation that we're not happy with. As a department, there's no pipeline there. But again, I think it's an issue of coordinated planning. There was no consultation, I think, with the sector players as well as ourselves in the construction of the airport. We do understand, however, that there are plans to build a pipeline. The route that is currently being used to service the new airport apparently is not congested at this stage, so they are able to move jet fuel to the airport with ease. But I think in terms of competitiveness of the economy, a pipeline is always better than a road. Then in terms of what other interventions are being made in terms of distribution to Gauteng, what has happened is that Transnet Freight Rail was operating 189 rail tankers to move fuels to inland. But they have committed to increase that to 437, which is more than double the capacity that they have. They had, and already they are over 300. They have over 300 rail tankers available. Then on the issue of the coal to liquids, the possibility of upscaling, Sasol has got a proposal to build an 80,000 barrels per day coal to liquid facility in Limpopo. However, they've indicated that they would like government support in doing that, and they had chosen IDC as an investment partner. They were in discussions with them, so we will be then monitoring. We do have a working team that is actually working with Sasol on that. We are monitoring developments there. However, there is an environmental downside to it, which again will talk to the issue of, you know, we say one thing about emissions and then there is something else done on the intervention side. However, I think it is important to note that coal basically saves this economy. The use of CTL, you know, say coal to liquid technology, saves this economy in terms of balance of payment. So any opportunity to upscale is welcome. However, it comes at a cost, and actually quite a substantial cost. That's the one thing. The other one is that we are a country with limited water resources, and CTL requires quite a lot of water. So, for example, for this proposed one in Limpopo, water is going to have to be piped from, you know, in as far as 170 kilometers away from the facility itself. It is at early stages, at this stage, but it's something that's on the table currently. Can it actually replace the crude oil refineries? We don't believe so. We think that, there has to be, South Africa has got to maintain a crude oil refining capability. In fact, we think a split of 70-30 is the one that we should maintain. But of course, the demand is going up in South Africa, but the coal to liquid is still sitting at a particular level. I just want to say that at the end of the day, all these investments have an impact on the pocket of the motorist, the taxpayer, and so on. And it is unfortunate that they come at the same time as the electricity ones. So there are going to have to be some trade-offs made. In the interim, we believe that we have to engage in securing oil for the country, which explains why some, you know, the minister and the president and a number of officials of the department spend time basically in countries, you know, that are oil producing, in order to actually see to what extent this strategy can be implemented. I believe that we were slightly slow off the blocks compared to the Chinas of this world, compared to the United States in Africa itself. However, oil is not lost. There is still a lot of oil resources that are being made available. The president of Congo, Brazzaville, was here. He has indicated willingness to ensure that South African companies participate in that sector. I think those that I have not covered, I'll ask Mr. Mkhize to. Just perhaps in closing, that globally, between now and 2030, $26 trillion has got to be spent on liquid fuels infrastructure. If then you say South Africa is 1% of that, it basically means that is how much that, you know, we are in for between now and 2030, which is quite sizable on its own. Thanks.
Thank you, DVG. Thanks, Chair. Just on the same issues, maybe taking off from the coal to liquids expansion, is that part of the thing that we're dealing with is that because we've got coal and you can only use what we have unless we import something else, that we're also looking at clean coal technologies, although not necessarily reflected in the strategic planning. And that is why we're sitting as the carbon sequestration, the Carbon Sequestration Leadership Forum, where we sit there as the deputy chair to the USA, as the chair, to look at this, because we've got to pursue coal technologies, but we need to make sure that we minimize the impact on the environment and look at issues like carbon sequestration and other technologies that can help in this regard. In terms of the biofuels, I just want to stress that in 2006, June 23rd of June, there were promulgation of regulations on fuel specifications and standards. And one of the major shifts in terms of our specifications was to have biodiesel included there explicitly, and moving away from just 4.5% to even go to 100%, where we had B10, B20, B30, B50, and then B100, where you could have the whole car running on biodiesel. So in terms of the enabling legislation, it's been made. The issues about the economics of getting this whole thing off the ground, and that is why now we want to look at the pricing mechanism to assist. And the challenge is, in fact, sitting on bioethanol, because bioethanol has got some technical challenges to handle because of its affinity to water. So that's what makes it difficult. Because in terms of pricing, we need to then look at the blending. Because when you blend bioethanol to the conventional fuel, you need to then discount the fact that they will need to make mechanical adjustments to their logistical chain to handle that. So that's where the challenge comes up. With the NMPP, at the time when we were working on it, the amount, it was 12.7, and as the DDG has indicated, it now moved to 15.4 billion rand. And then when it comes to the issues of shortage of fuel, and then I think there was an issue that was raised concerning being able to take in crude oil. Crude oil comes via the single boy mooring. It's sitting not very far from Sabres there, out there. So crude, in fact, all our crude for the use in the country comes through that SPM and not necessarily through the bed, because if we take it to the bed, it's going to take a long time and it needs these large sheets.
So it comes through that and then goes gas pipe and then goes to the engine refinery and the separate refinery. The other one goes via the NATCOS, so-called NATCOS tanks, and then gets to Natref in Sasoltec via the crude oil pipeline. So that is how we are. But in terms of the bed 6 and bed 9, I understand that the repairs are going on well and they are on track in terms of being finalized around May, before beginning of May, they will be done. And then the issue of the new empowerment dispensation is just there are always these national versus sector-specific challenges, and all of us saying that we are going to look at the sector-specific challenges in the view of what is happening in the national space. And I'm just using the word new here because we're still looking at generally, because you cannot say it's a new charter, because maybe we're not going to be calling them charters going forward or whatever. So that's why I'm talking about it as a general term, to say we have to have a new dispensation of empowerment, looking at the challenges that we are facing, both as a developmental state and also looking at the socio-economic conditions in the country. And the last thing that was asked was around the issue of the CADO project. With regard to the CADO project, there's this sugar beet. It's got a lot, because what they need to do is to take the sucrose that is turned into, you then use the sugar to turn it into alcohol, and then you can have bioethanol. There is a sugar beet project. Sugar beet looks like the normal beetroot that you have, but it's like more elongated and it's whitish in color. And then you use that to make a bioethanol. So they pursued that solely looking at it as a commercial venture, and they've looked at it in line with the imperatives of the country in terms of developing the biofuels industry. And they've pursued that, and we are just in consultation with them so that we can have a living project that we can use in terms of tightening up our mechanism going forward, so that you can see its usefulness and engage the industry in this regard. That's all for my side. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll cover the question on rural electrification, on electrification. So first, I'll start with the issue of the figures, where we get our figures from, where we get our statistics from. The baseline for our statistics that we use Stats SA, and the way they basically determine the statistics is that when they do the statistics, they go into a household, and the question that is there is that they ask is that what mechanism of lighting does a household use? If they can say a candle, they can say electricity and so on. And then they will take all the questions that they are lighting with electricity as a house which has electricity. Where they said candle or any other form except electricity, then it will then be considered as a household without electricity. So that's where we get our base information. Then from there, we will, on monthly basis from the department side now, on yearly basis, we will then add the number of connections that we then do. But further on, we would then engage with municipalities. We engage with a lot of municipalities before the 1st of March, to make sure that going forward we have got the base information to basically do the planning. So that's basically how we use that information. In terms of the planned connections versus the output, it's very rare that you can have such a situation in KwaZulu-Natal and so on, because the areas like Free State and so on, the infrastructure is such that you can actually connect more in some instances. For instance, in this case, we found that they have done a project, but the majority of their connections were like infills. When we say infills, it's like the backbone infrastructure was already there, and they were doing a lot of minor extensions from the existing infrastructure, which was closer and even cheaper to do connections. Although the plan was such that they would do very very little. So that has been the case. We have situations like that on electrification, although it's not that big. In terms of the Millennium Development Goals, if we consider the current level of funding and the number of connections that we are currently doing, it will be very difficult to say that by 2014 we would have given everybody access to electricity, including informal settlement. The 1 million houses which are in the informal or which are informal and unproclaimed land, if human settlement obviously cannot eradicate the backlog on informal settlement, obviously those people will not have access to electricity. In terms of the formal households, there are, of course, pockets of excellence in terms of the work that has been done. In terms of the numbers that we have, approximately about 128 municipalities will be able to reach that specific target. So the rest, which is majority of them, are in the Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo. In all other provinces, we are confident that they will be able to do that. But in the three provinces that I have mentioned, which is where the majority of the population is, and the topography and the environment there is such that you need to do a lot of work, building a lot of lines and kilometers of lines to be able to connect them. So it's going to take some time. Thank you.
I can just add in to be clear about the last point about the Millennium Development Goals is the inference that electrification will assist them. So if we don't reach the Millennium Development Goals, it is not because we have not had poverty and so on. It's the fact that we might not have fully electrified. I think the question was whether we will reach the Millennium Development Goals, and we understand the relationship between electrification and that. But so just maybe to start with the nuclear program, the question about the risk to weapons use due to the use of nuclear is that the risk will always be there, but there are safeguards that are in place, some of which relate to, for example, what you can call best practice, non-proliferation, and so on. But also the fact that as a country we have abandoned the use of, if you like, the remnant use of a nuclear weapons program and related highly enriched uranium. That's the basis upon which we can safely say that the risk is being mitigated. The reference to nuclear governance is not in relation to safety or any danger. It was in relation to the fact that the nuclear program is undertaken by different players. Eskom has a program with Kuwait, Nexa has a program. There was also PBMR, and the idea around that is ultimately wanting to ensure that there is a coordination under some governance structure as to how that happens. The Nuclear Energy Act does make some specific provisions in terms of how mandates are supposed to be undertaken. There were a number of questions around solar water heating progress to date, which means perhaps last week, maybe next week, progress, meaning that by this weekend, we will be launching, or the president will be launching, the solar water heating program in Gauteng on Sunday. 7,000 systems will be installed within the city of Tshwane under a program funded by the fiscal. There's been significant movement in relation to where we have started. The difference here being that, amongst other things, amongst other milestones, the funding has been confirmed with the determination by NERSA of the multi-year price determination about a month ago. Because one of the things, you might be aware, one of the biggest problems was how this whole program was going to be funded. And now it is, it has been confirmed. The Honourable Member wanted to spend some time, and I would suggest that perhaps the Sunday would be a good opportunity to see what this whole program is about. Regarding the concentrating solar power project and whether there is a strategic partner for it, the background is that during the or in the World Bank loan application negotiations, one of the conditions was that they needed to have confirmation, and I think as the Honourable Member has rightfully pointed out, that, you know, there is a coal program, it's going ahead, but we're not trying to negate that. There is a program to also mitigate emissions, and the World Bank had insisted that the CSP program would send the necessary message, or seriousness about taking it off the ground would send the necessary message, and as a result, they insisted that Eskom, rather than the private sector, must do it, because Eskom had been the most advanced in terms of preparedness for CSP. So there is no strategic partner for CSP as we speak. It's a program that is undertaken by Eskom. However, you might also be aware that the REFIT program does provide for CSP development by the private sector, and that's where we would hopefully get additional opportunities. There was a question, sorry, I omitted to mention this one around, so I'm just asking answering the question as they came. The rebate for solar water heaters and how the measurement and verification will happen was an interesting one. In fact, we are alive to that particular challenge, and the protocol for what we call MNV for solar water heaters is different. It's not based on a rent per kilowatt hour number. What it entails is an assumption, and this is global practice, is an assumption, for example, that every solar water heater will displace, let's call it 300 kilowatt hours every month. So the rebate would be a rent per month basis rather than a kilowatt hour, because you wouldn't know whether the kilowatt hour was saved because you heated it through the sun or it was because of electricity. So it would be a flat rate per month basis. However, down the line, we also recognize that, you know, it's more important to get the process off the ground than to get the actual verification right. So the regulator would have the opportunity in time to review the actual rebate per month, depending on the performance of the incentive. In terms of the working for energy program, the feasibility to use that alien species as fuel, is that, well, there are two approaches to it. The one is that we've done some geographical mapping of locations where the existence of the alien species is such that you can economically exploit it as a power generation source. It entails huge tracts of land, particularly in the southern KZN and in the northern Eastern Cape. There are areas and localities which have been mapped, literally identified as target areas. So it is feasible. We have looked into it in more detail. Some of the problems still relate to the actual technology, because you don't want to burn it as a normal combustion process. One of the things we're looking at is gasification, which tends to be a lot more attractive, and scale becomes an issue that comes into it. And those are some of the detail, but I don't want to go into too much technical detail. Wave generation technology we have looked at in a lot more detail as well. The Scottish, the Americans, the Australians do have some technology. Unfortunately, it's a developing technology, so it's not something that you can put into, you know, into your your grid, you know, like we need the power yesterday. So it's something that is an option for the future. Regarding the IPPs and the role of the regulator in price setting and in licensing, the Honourable Member is correct. There is a process under the new generation, and I think when we started, we did indicate that one of our focus areas is the new generation capacity regulations under the Electricity Regulation Act, and it's very clear what the process is. So it's not like prices are going to be set in any other manner than what is prescribed under those regulations. And incidentally, the regulator does not set the price. The regulator licenses, and the license would include the price. The price is set through a competitive bidding process or through a feed-in tariff kind of process. So not even the regulator themselves would have any say as to what the prices would rather be set by the process that is described in the regulation. I think the questions around electrification have all been answered. Chair, I'm just trying to check if there's any other questions I haven't. Yeah, I think that covers all of it. Thanks.
Okay, members, that's covered your questions. Are there any outstanding questions that have not been covered? Honourable Sinclair, our time, we've passed our time. I think the notice was for 5. For 6. But there's other members that need to take public transport, or what, parliamentary transport. Yeah, and I don't know what time the buses are running. 6? Last bus? 5:15 and 6, the last one. Is it a burning issue, or can you put it to the department in writing?
A cold fire burning.
You can put your question in less than a minute, and it's fine.
Yeah. Jefferson, no, we've spent a lot of, you know, I mean, this whole department is so diverse, but the one issue that I think that we didn't address is the issue about the transformation of the petrol industry. And I think we really must have a serious discussion about that, and I think Mr. McKeesey deals with that, and I want to engage him because I see here part of the challenges is that they say the industry is not transformed, but I've got not personal experience. People contacted me to say, but they're trying to liaise with the department, and the department is not coming to the table in terms of addressing the issue, in terms of assisting them, in terms of doing the paperwork, that type of thing, the administrative hurdles that's there. So if I can just maybe at some stage have interaction regarding that.
I think you know, there is also some other members that want to engage the department more on issues. So next week we've got reports, but I think it's going to be a cardinal sin if we call the department back next week on Tuesday, Madam Secretary. Do you think it's possible if we can do that? Honourable Gameda, your committee next week Tuesday? Yeah, Wednesday, so there's nothing. So I think, DDG, if you can, just pencil in next week Tuesday, but it will be in the morning then.
Budget vote next Tuesday. The Minister's budget vote speeches on next Tuesday, the 20th.
Where is that? In the NA?
Yes.
What time?
It's in the afternoon.
But we engaging in the morning.
You want to engage us in the morning? Okay.
Now the minister's budget speech will be ready over the weekend. Isn't that so?
The minister is overseas preparing at the moment. No, I think we can make it.
We might have a smaller
representation, but what we'll try and do is that we'll have the relevant people. Like the other member says, saying he wants some keys, so we'll make sure that he's there. But I think we'll make it up, Chairperson.
Okay, so it will be then with some keys and Kubela and Ompi and. Is there still one thing that you want to facilitate or something?
I might be out of order, but with your permission, we are here on Thursday for the NCO thing. And we are here on Tuesday, so I was wondering if Wednesday. The 22nd is the NCO people.
Wednesday is the Committee of Trade and International Relations is their day. But let's see how it goes. Maybe we can even spend an hour with one another. And so they don't have to take, because normally our meetings is from 10 to 1. And if there's any clarifications that the minister needs, she's got her advisors and all that in the office. So we'll do that then next week. Members, is that fine with you, Honourable Mashamban?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, that's fine, but there was one question I asked, and it's a simple number, and if it's not available, then that's fine. But I hope it's not because you're avoiding answering. How many water heaters have been installed in terms of the program?
Well, we can give you the answer on Tuesday also.
You can do it, but he might have it
now, please.
Under the rebate program as currently being rolled out, in Tshwane there are 7,000 that are being rolled out. We will achieve 30,000 under the fiscal program. The intention, though, is that we will do 200,000 overall under both fiscal and the rebate program from the tariff. And the idea there is that we don't want to go beyond that because we're wanting to localize more than import everything.
Thank you. I think the other thing that you should keep in mind for Tuesday is that rumors has it that after the World Cup, we will have rolling blackouts again. Because at the moment we are importing current from our neighboring countries. But just keep that in the back of your mind for Tuesday, as that is concerned. DDG, you and your team, thank you very much for this afternoon. It has been a lengthy process. You see how important the NCOP is also. But thank you very much for availing yourself, and thank you in advance for availing yourself for next week Tuesday. And many more others. That's wonderful, DDT. Honourable members, thank you very much for your time and for the questions. I hope that the alliance at the end of the table is not going to conquer up more and more questions. But feel free next week, Tuesday, to put your questions to the department. And have a happy evening.